Hello everyone, and welcome to this lecture in Introduction in Software Engineering. Instead of Professor Kasper Lassenius, I'm here today to talk about free and open source software. About myself, been participating actively in this Linux distribution since 2005. I got involved in the distribution a couple years earlier. Since then, been started doing packaging mainly, then joined the decision-making body through elections called the Gentoo Council, doing handling personal-related tasks like disputes and just hacking or whatever feels most interesting. Then also participating in Google Summer of Code. How many of you know what Google Summer of Code is? Couple. If you're ever looking for a Jammer job, want to use it on open source, do it on open source, Google pays students $5,000 to work on pretty much all of the major open source projects. So you propose an idea or select one of the existing ideas and apply and work from home with a mentor from somewhere around the globe. So if you want to, instead of going to a company, get experience hacking, you can get paid for that as well through Google. It's not as popular in Finland as in like India and Asia, of course, because $5,000 gives you much more in developing countries than in Finland, but still. Besides that, here in Aalto, I'm working as a research assistant in Sober IT. And I have taken this course some years back, don't remember, quite a while. Don't know if it has changed a lot since then. So, briefly about what is Gentoo. How many of you here use Linux distributions? Raise your hands. Desktop, server, okay. So, distributions, well, in Microsoft, you get some, on Windows, you get some software, and then on Linux distributions, you get all the software from single source. And people contributing to the Linux distributions are the ones who make all the software available. I think last count, Gentoo, the package count was like 10,000. So, you need quite a few people to update whenever there's new releases. Of course, the more popular the package is, the more often someone looks at it, instead of some obscure scientific package that's used by a couple of researchers around the world. In comparison to like Mozilla Firefox, quite a little bit of difference there in the usage. Why I didn't put Gentoo/Linux there is that you can run BSD kernels with it as well. BSD and Linux are both open source software, but BSD is started California, Berkeley, I think. Linux Tool started Linux, but both are Unix systems stemming from the old systems developed in the US by, I think, at least, and both universities and companies like Sun and AT&T. Besides, like with Ubuntu, you get every 6 months, you get a new release. In Gentoo, you don't install any new releases, you just get new software as it is released. So if Mozilla comes out with a new Firefox version today, then you can install it tomorrow instead of waiting for, well, I think in Ubuntu they might install, they don't update Ubuntu as well, but they might not give you latest OpenOffice, for example, before the new Ubuntu release is out. But this is like hacker's version, so if you're looking to start up using Linux, suggest looking at like Ubuntu, for example, to start with. Okay, so starting with some definitions. First for free software, and then for open source software. there's a distinction there, so which is quite important. This is the definition given by the Free Software Foundation. You can find through that URL there. Free Software Foundation is a US nonprofit that advocates for free software, but best known for Richard Stallman. Who here has heard of Richard Stallman? Those who don't know about him probably can mentally picture a middle-aged, long-bearded guy that you traditionally associate with open source. But he started it. And he's also, if you heard of the license GPL, General Public License, is the mind behind the initial versions. Okay, so the four freedoms. First, the freedom to run the program for any purpose. For example, seen some people license their software, like this can be used for any purpose besides in nuclear power. So if you license it that way, that you can't use it in nuclear pans or to create weapons or whatever restrictions there, then it's not free software anymore. But the good thing, of course, is that for any purpose includes commercial purposes as well. So it doesn't, free software doesn't exclude making money as long as you follow their rules. Second, the freedom to study how the program works and change it so does your computing as you wish. I think I might have made a typo there. Access to the source code is a precondition to this. So it suits your computing as you wish, I think. So basically, to tinker around and see the software instead of going to a manual and looking how it works or looking at API documents, if you can go to the source code, which I actually do quite often in my work on a web application. I also work in a startup developing customer feedback systems using Ruby on Rails. How many of you know Ruby on Rails? Again, same crowd. Goes together usually, the whole stack. But basically, if you buy commercial software and use like Microsoft.NET, use the class libraries, then if you're a software engineer working on it in a company, you're pretty much left with what Microsoft provides you on Microsoft Developer Network. You have the APIs there and you take a look and, well, this is what you put in and this is how you get out. It's a black box. If the black box doesn't work, what do? Well, you can call Microsoft and hope you get an answer. But, well, with many open source libraries, well, you don't have the MSDN. You're lucky if you have a couple of README pages telling you how it works. Then, well, yeah, if you follow the basic use case, given a README, you might be able to use it. But besides that, then you're stuck with opening the source and looking what APIs are available just through looking at the class files. And then for your computing as you wish, means for example, you have software here developed for desktop. Well, I want it running on my washing machine. Well, yeah, you can go port it to your washing machine. If you didn't have any source code for that and it's compiled for Microsoft x86, then, well, the processor and the washing machine's ARM, well, tough. By the way, that is probably one of the reasons why Microsoft has such big troubles going to the tablet market. Well, because they've always been doing x86 and tablets are ARMs. Do you know, is the x86 ARM familiar with? Well, some you know, ARM processors. That's what you usually have in your pocket in your smartphones. And x86 is what you have on these big boxes that run Windows. The same binary doesn't run on both. Okay, freedom two, the freedom to distribute copies so you can help your neighbor. Well, you have software, you've got it from somewhere, you have the Microsoft license, you can give it to your neighbor. You have open source software, you can. Or free software in this case. Then, besides distributing, you get shareware software or a game that's shareware. You get the binary, you run it, you can give it to your buddy, but you can't add new levels to it unless it's might have the level editor, but it doesn't, and this license doesn't give you the access to it. Well, but with open, if it's an open source game, you can change the main character, use your own head, and give it to your friend as a Christmas present or at Santa Claus's, whatever. And of course, you need the source code to be able to do this. Yeah, it started from zero. Good programmers always start from zero, but when they start from one, they get bugs. Okay, so there's free software, then there's the term open source software, which is more commonly used. Definition from this open source initiative, OCI, that lists six criteria for distribution terms. So the important thing here is that these just deal with distribution. For open source licenses anyway, it's usually because it's based on copyright law, deals with distribution. So it doesn't have much to do with then the fact that when you're not in the domain of copyright law, for example, just using the copy you have locally. This is why, if you've probably heard of viral and non-viral software, like GPL is viral. Who knows what that means? There, maybe we could participate a little. You can take the microphone and tell them what the viral means there. And get more interactive there. See, it works too. Check it here.
Yeah. Viral basically means that if you have you made changes, what will be the license or what copyright for that those changes? That's about what is some people think that's a viral.
So yeah, the same license must be used in your modifications. That's the basic idea. But instead of if it's not a viral license, then your own work can be licensed under any terms. And I feel free to interrupt me at any point and ask questions and so forth. Of course, with viral licenses, you're not necessarily restricted to the same license just on its own. You can, when you're the author, you can license your works in any way you wish. Doesn't necessarily need to be just one license. If you look at MySQL, a Finnish company that was those database engines that was sold to Sun, then to Oracle, they sold proprietary versions, closed source versions of their own, in next to the open source version. So the model there was that you assigned copyright to MySQL AB, and then they are free to license it, but they still pledge to use it as open source, I think. Same with Java these days, open source. But if you want to contribute to Java, you have to print and sign a document from Oracle stating that you give them copyrights. And if copyright is not possible, then permission to do whatever in the long legal terms. Also, in case you didn't notice, down there, this work is not open source, but open content maybe. If you ever heard of Creative Commons and pondered about online pictures and using it in your presentations, Creative Commons as a way to license content instead of software for the open source can be used. It's always, if you deal with open source communities, there's those people who care very deeply about the licenses and then those who want to hack, and usually those who care deeply that the license licenses go correctly are very vocal, so have to be careful with them. Okay, so open source software, the six criteria for distribution terms. A free distribution. You can't prohibit selling or giving away the software. You can, with GPL software, charge people for the transmission, I think, in some cases, but most of the time it's just available online. But it could still be open source software in the sense that it's only available by mailing some company and getting the source back. It can still fit this, not very practical. Well, source code, open source code. Then, very important distinction here is that deliberately obfuscated source code is not allowed. Can't make open source software by putting the source code online, running through obfuscator and telling that branding purposes for a company. Yeah, we are supporting open source software, but to actually hack on it would be quite annoying. I worked on a software a while back that was translated from Fortran to C, starting with variables from A, B, C, maybe some number thrown in. It wasn't fun. Derived works. So you can modify, in other terms, and then distribute it that way. Integrity of the other source code. There's a distinction that the license may require derived works to carry a different name or version number from the original software. Important is always to separate the branding and trademark side and the actual source code. If you have Red Hat, it's an enterprise thing. You can't take Red Hat Enterprise Linux and install it on your software, although it's open source software. The software itself is open source, but then trademark law comes into play. Red Hat is, the red logo is trademarked. So while source code and copyright side is okay, you can use the trademark. But then there's, you can get CentOS, which is pretty, basically the same thing, strip out the trademarks. Distribution of license. The rights attached to the program must apply to all whom the program is redistributed without the need for execution of an additional license by those parties. The license must not be specific to a product. Well, to be accepted to OC, it's specific to them. It's general open source licenses. They don't accept this license for this particular software. Then we'd have 200. The problem with open source software and licenses is that they need to be compatible. If you work on open source software, use it in software engineering, so have to be careful that you don't mix and match in the sense that you end up in your product violating, being bound to terms that you can simultaneously fulfill. If license A says that you need to new open source license A says that you need to stand on a chair, and then the open source license B says that you need to sit on a chair, you can't do both at the same time, and then it leads to the fact that even if you're hacking an open source project like GPL project, then there's Apache, if you have heard of Apache HTTP server for serving websites, the most popular one. You couldn't take source code from Apache projects and put it to GPL projects because there's, I think, terms dealing with patents that couldn't be matched. Then, there is no alternative to that besides going to the original authors and asking them to license in some other way. This is one of the reasons why in companies they're usually have policy, many of them just have policies of never using open source software, and then they don't have to deal with this. So, but because open source has to be able to work, it works in the legal environment that the society provides. It's, that is the limitation, unfortunately. If you know the Citizens Initiative Järkeä tekijänoikeuslakiin and are interested in open source software, I strongly encourage you to go and sign that thing to get the ball rolling to a better direction instead of lobbyist companies and usually in Finland participate in those projects, participate in changing those laws. Six criteria and then I listed them and there's much more. Oh well. Okay, so what was the distinction? Free versus open source software. And that's Richard Stallman, by the way. And if you ever use Creative Commons, very commonly people just take the images, but you will, that's an attribution license, so I'm required in some way to state that the software was used. Similar in open source software, and many times it says, can say something along the lines that it should be mentioned like in GPL. So if you're writing software and you have proprietary software, and then you use open source companies and desktop software to distribute, it might be that in the hello boxes, helps or whatever, you're required to show attribution. So in some way, even if you're giving away, we're at least getting recognition. If you want to be employed working on open source software, if you contribute batches to the Linux kernel, it's pretty sure that someone will come to you with a job offer down the line. So instead of the mental image that Linux would be developed by the kernel, would be developed by individual hackers, the reality is that these days most of the contributions come from companies where people work on their company hours and contribute software back there. Of course, most of the source code is drivers, so getting your hardware to work is much easier if you're in that company instead of trying to hack on blueprints. But the free software, the ideas and change the world, open source software, the pragmatic part of the practice, and the icons for each, like Richard Stallman, Linux Tools. It manifests in the sense that if you interview or want to interview Richard Stallman, you need to agree that you use the term GNU / Linux to refer to Linux distributions, because Linux is just the core of the operating system, and besides that, you need a lot of software. He's very adamant that he's in his views and doesn't necessarily change them. That Linux Torvalds is more towards the getting software out and getting something works for people. Both are good things, of course. Example, BSD, two-class license. Basically, the bolded bar at the bottom is just US law there, where in some states you need to use bold caps for warranty statements so that people would recognize and be able to read them better. Yeah, right. But the two things, that's it. So in below it's just no warranty. But two things, redistribution of source code must retain the above copyright notice, list of conditions and the following disclaimer. And then, again, something for binary forms. This is a very permissive license. Basically, the only direct way to violate this license would be to remove these notices. Besides that, you can do whatever you want. Do you still, when someone, if it was in a company code base, you would see the original authors, even if not from the functioning of the source code. But this is like a license that you can easily incorporate into proprietary software. Examples, Postgres is a BSD license database software. Anyone can take the full source code, do the modifications, never give it back, because there's no viral terms in this license. GPL3, well, I can't, there's pages and pages of legal text, I can't put it on the slide. They'll buy US common law lawyers, not that easy to understand, but the basic, there are many differences, but a couple important points, for example, is that the same license must be used for derived works, GPL3. So when it says that, GPL3 says that it needs to be open source, and then derived works are everything that uses it. If you're using your proprietary software in your company and you want to do a product that's super secret and the algorithm is the key, then you can't really use GPL3 because you would have to open source the algorithm, and then it's there for everyone. Then has updates from version 2 to version 3, things like I have my washing machine, so I need to be able to use it and install it on the washing machine instead of DRM restrictions that you've probably know if you use a DVD player that they restrict what you can play there. But they with this version, they try to restrict things like that. There are other versions of GPL library, or lesser terms I've used for all GPL, for where there's no viral restriction in your right works that you can use it. Or AGPL offer GPL, which is that when you use it on a web application, that constitutes distribution. So GPL3 these days, when you use software and service like Google, that's very pretty much powered by open source software, they can hack on it as much as they want because it stays in Google servers. No distributions happens in legal terms, and they're just able to hack it as much as they want. But if all the software was AGPL, then they would have to open source all the cool stuff they have within Google. If you're interested in more of these legal things, follow-up courses, computer law, maybe the English joint guess a very good course. The license and copyright and trademark law is that how you can still protect your product. Or companies can protect their products using trademark laws, like Red Hat has done, or Mozilla, Firefox, or Debian. They're all trademarked. But Debian then has a license on their trademark that you can use the trademark according to the law license or guidelines, more like. So, free versus open source software, what is open source software? Any questions, or is the definitions, freedoms, here, what you can do, kind of clear from that? So, these days, where is open source and how you can find it? Everywhere. More and more so. Like I mentioned, the Android phones, Linux. It has an interesting development model, though. Google develops Android internally. Then when they release new things, they just give a huge blob of source code. Not too interested in, not the best way to get contributions back, but I'm guessing that's not their goal. More marketing reasons is that the new features are not available until they release. They can release then the cool. They can release their coolest, or get some partners to pay them money to release the coolest Android 4.something, 5.0. Instead, if it was developed on the open, some Chinese manufacturer could have taken that new features as they come along and already released new phones. Desktop. There's this saying that this year will be the year of Linux on desktop for, like, I don't know, quite a few years. But still, I see Macs, probably Windows, on universities, you see Linux machines, but if you go to companies, don't expect to find too many Linux machines there. But server-side software, if you think about Google, like the Hamina factory, and you would pay Microsoft stack licenses for each of their servers, they would never have had enough money to grow to the size that they're at today if they had to license all of the software. And startups, starting a company, it's nice. You don't have to upfront pay money. Then Microsoft have noticed that there's this program, BizSpark, I think, and they license all their software for you for like a year. And you freely can use them as much as you want, and when the year is over, money. How to make money? We all need to eat. That's for more like company side. But then, of course, working on it, as I mentioned, there's companies building products on Linux, so you can go and work on that side. Then much more easier, of course, to tell your friends what you're working on instead of if it's a secretive company that makes you sign NDAs and you said, well, I work on software and a product that's vaguely like this, then you can say that this and this feature here was done by you in open source. Heavy stack users, big internet sites. I always find it interesting to look at the URLs when you browse around and see what the sites are built with. You can see that if you look at Finnish government sites, you see .asp, ASPX, which is Microsoft sites. Then you look at Google, Wikipedia, and so forth, you see Facebook, PHP. So no wonder our tax money is usually spent on expensive public projects when there's also Microsoft stacks and so forth involved. Probably the same companies then build the product, and on the other hand, I have a different department selling the Microsoft licenses and maintenance as well. Ties up nicely together. Then in selling support. So if you're not, don't want to be left with just looking at the source code, you can also then get a company like Red Hat. Then you have the phone line. You can tell your manager that, like with proprietary software, there's this hotline where I can call and tell about my troubles. I don't have personally experience with open source support contracts to tell how much it works, how well it works, but I would assume $1 billion revenue for Red Hat gives you equal levels or even better than any other company. And it's not likely that Red Hat would be disappearing anywhere. If you use open source software, the traditional case is that it's developed by a handful of people around the world. They get sick or think about doing something else, and then no one develops the software anymore. But if you contract with a big company, then they have staff. They say that this Red Hat Enterprise Linux will support it for the next 5 years. What I do with them, well, Firefox, Gentoo, this running on LibreOffice, building software, missing there, running on desktops. I've run the same installation of Linux from 2005 through three different hardware. Yeah.
As previous slide, I think one of many important things also customization.
Yeah.
Customization work for customer, fitting the software to the customer's business processes and something like that.
Yeah, if you think about building good ecosystem, that would save tax money too. If all the software the government uses open source, then you could have a good industry of software engineering companies that would provide customization for this and this new feature instead of going to Tieto or Accenture, paying them tons of money, waiting 1 year and a half to get the e-received text field length changed from 50 characters to probably next time 75, and then it's 1.5 years, then it's 100. But some, whenever you're doing in requirements engineering, doing requirements engineering and that work in the industry, hopefully you will be able to a little bit restrict, based on this education, a little bit stick up to the man and make better specifications, but never worked on that field, and it's hard to say what the solution would be to such complex problems on the government side. Basically, no one there is too trained or too familiar with buying IT projects. So you have like medical projects like Apotti, which is the buying the new thing. There's doctors or bureaucrats that mostly make up the groups and preparing the things instead of IT people. But of course, that also makes sense because software is just means to an end. And there is also the end result is not to run software in a hospital that give you health services. Have you guys get breaks in the middle usually, or just go directly and then see when we end? Yeah, anyone have any other ideas around software, how to make money with open source software that you would like to share or think of? Or how many of you have thought when you go to work somewhere that you would like to work, assuming there's people here who are aiming to work in IT, so that have you ever given thought that what kind of a company, was proprietary versus open source software, it would be, and we work. No one? Well, now is a good place to think about that. Doesn't matter if you're working on, even if you're not working on the code itself, like software engineering, writing the code is just a small part. We've probably seen in previous lectures that this course by itself and deal so much, or in general software engineering is like sometimes I described to my friends that there's all the parts that are involved in creating software than writing the software itself. So how do these open source projects get started? Well, how Linux started in Helsinki in the beginning of the 90s. Linux wanted to, I think his, in his original email, he said, announcing the thing, he said something along the lines that this is just a hobbyist project, nothing serious. Well, it did end up being something totally different. Or then projects like Mozilla that started in Netscape. Netscape was the computer to Internet Explorer back in the day. No business to be made there, and Microsoft neither has never had too much business in IE, besides killing competition there, making them money in other ways. Version control systems, besides the kernel, the other major project started by Linux is a distributed version control system. Have you, in previous lectures, touched on probably version, the what's the VC, what's the term, the change control in general. Git is one distributed instance for specifically for the managing software in a way that traditionally you would stack up changes in CV, for example, CVS is you make a change and another change and another change, and you can only go linearly. But in Git, you can branch as much as you want. If you ever on project courses later on think about selecting version control system, Git has all the features you need in a not so easy to learn and convenient to use format, but it is a powerful tool, so you can take a look. And it can still be used to version things locally if you want to version any text files, like your master's thesis. How can anyone participate? Well, there's besides writing code in open source software and software engineering, like in any software engineering activity that still needs to be done, you can do software engineering projects. Well, requirements engineering. An open source software requirements engineering could be you provide a feature request to their bug tracker. Quality assurance, you can use the software, test it as much as you want. Documentation, release processes, marketing, anything that goes with that. And that's also a good way to gain experience in distributed software development that is in the industry. More and more used. If put in your CV that you worked on open source projects, because the communication happens quite usually only through a mailing list or IRC channels, then you have a pretty good experience in faceless communication in industry distributed projects. The biggest challenge that usually comes up in scientific literature is communication, communication across time zones, different kind of people. So India, for example, if outsourced there, then we had a distributed project in Europe, 1 year back here in software development course two with Vancouver, 10 hours time zone difference, communicating there. Was quite a bit of a challenge when you don't have common working hours. But if you have experience from open source projects, you can use in your CV to that you have already gained experience in distributed software development. So it's not just experience in open source software, but it does provide software engineering experience that's helpful in other ways as well. If you ever want to contribute source code, the basic flow is that you get the source code, you develop it, and get it, give it back. Hopefully a project makes it quite easy, but that's not always the case. Good projects do. But I've seen, in open source software, like any software, you see projects that are in awful shape and barely maintainable, and then some open source projects are very good case study examples of good software engineering practices. They have running for doing agile software development. They have running continuous integration servers. They have good bug trackers to track things. Then they get releases out to the public often, which in, for example, Scrum, the iterative, the aim of each iteration would be to get a release out and test it and production quality. In many open source projects, you can get the production quality code in any commit in the version control repository. But if you're a company doing more like waterfall kind of big project for the government, then as you start the project, will be quite a long time before there's anything usable. Like, well, you probably know from previous lectures. So there's a quite a good comparison in Agile, many things that you use in Agile, and then good open source projects. There is no way that, like, you would have, if you try to take into use these government projects in the middle of the project, then you would be able to do it anything good with it. But if it's in comparison, if you're done using Agile methods instead of specifying, trying to do the requirements engineering to nail down, then instead of using Agile methods or any open source software, you take the version and in the middle of project, and there's already something usable, even if it the project itself doesn't continue. Instead of wasting the millions and millions and just shelving it in the end. So, has anyone heard that phrase before? Given enough eyeballs, all books are shallow. In quality assurance, well, most of the time, the only there are very seldom dedicated testers in open source projects. Guessing it doesn't. Is there anyone here who has this passion to be working in a software company doing test manual testing all day, clicking through things and so forth? Like I predicted, there's a good essay on two different kind of module, looking into case study open source projects, and the famous essay by Eric Raymond. If you Google the cathedral and the bazaar, if you're interested in reading more, you can find it there. So the basic idea is that the Linux kernel source code and quality assurance, well, if you give enough people reading the source code, then they spot all the bugs there. And that's been also studied, how many lines per code there are defects. And in the Linux kernel, well, of course, it depends on the use, but in the kernel, the numbers, which I now forgot, are very, very low, but 1,000 lines. Backlog management or requirements engineering. If you do Scrum for, then you'll always have more things in your backlog than you can ever think you do to be able to do. If there's nothing in a software or project or let's say this is more towards product business. If you have a product business and you have nothing in your backlog, then it's not likely that your company is going to survive in the long term. But for open source software, very seldom would you find a roadmap that these are the things that we want to do even in the next months. But you probably the best thing you can do is find a bug tracker with feature ideas. But then again, what is a sprint backlog, then an ordered list of items. You're just only missing the ordering part here. A little bit more about the cathedral and the bazaar. In the cathedral model, it's develop, for example, Emacs or was an example of this, that they develop the code, and then they put it out with each release. instead of the buzzer, but in the SA, Linux kernel is used as an example, and done it in the open, then advocating the latter option, of course, in the SA. So how the projects managed, where in bigger projects with the like Linux kernel and then Mozilla, you find very strict organization in that Linux kernel. You have Linux Torvalds, but his main job is to basically to collect software from his trusted lieutenants who maintain systems, and they get software then from contributors, and it flows. The layered structure in scientific research, when they have looked at how open source projects are structured, they can find distinct profiles of people contributing. Usually there's a core a group of people or that are the active people that work regularly on the project. Then there's the casual contributors or mailing list participants. And then there are the people that you really don't know about, for example, uses of your software. In Gentoo, you can provide estimates on how many people use the distribution, but in reality, you have no life, no way to accurately count them, like you can guess. Open source projects are not very keen on including any kind of tracking or registration things. Instead of, if you are selling less, well, at least you know your legitimate customers, maybe not all the Asian pirates using your software. But the basic tenet is meritocracy, say based on merit. Usually you get to handle a project, well, like I ended up with Gentoo, is just being involved a lot, and then providing, not participating, and then you end up maintaining or being in charge of things. Most of the time, like, you take a project, open source project, the smaller, you usually find just one or two people who are actually looking at it, and then the so-called project leader. Sober IT provides open source software, has developed a couple examples. Developed the lab. AgileFan is a backlog management tool for agile processes. Has it been mentioned in previous lectures? No. For doing Scrum in practice or any iterative and backlog management can. Is a good, lightweight, a very functional solution for that, being developed for probably a decade or at least quite a long time anyways. Rewritten a couple of times in the meanwhile. But then a more recent tool for doing retrospectives. Do you know what retrospectives are? And software process improvement. When you continually want to improve the processes you use in your company project, whatever. For example, a method to do that in the Scrum would be that in the end of a Scrum sprint, of the Alpha Agile sprint, you take a session called the retrospective session, where you think back on what went well, what went wrong, what problems there were, then try to come up with problems, and then do continuous software process improvement. So by inspecting, evaluating solutions, and then implementing them in the next sprint, and then the cycle continues. And then this ARCA, is a root cause analysis tool. Root cause analysis would be that to find the cause of the cause and the cause of, and that somebody have to stop. But you think, what is the underlying the issue, like introducing a bug using this? So this is a tool, and you can use the web application that helps doing root cause analysis and retrospectives. Okay, I was thinking instead of me talking quite a lot, I could show a couple of pages of open source in practice, what we can find there. Who are familiar with GitHub, or one, two people? Like, Git is a version control system. This is a collaborative site that can be used to contribute and work on open source projects and find the projects themselves are hosted here on GitHub. This is a library that you can use to automate testing web applications with a robot. That you can use that to build a test solution that goes around the website and clicks here and there and tries that everything works. So when I fill this form and I press submit, then I should see registration complete kind of tests. Provide you installation instructions and instructions on using it. And of course, the source code can be browsed through here. Can you see the font? A little bit slow, but doesn't matter. See the point. So here we can see that this project is mainly maintained by this one guy called, with the nick of Jay Nicholas. So, if talking about requirements engineering for this open source project, the only way to get any roadmaps would be to go to his blog, where he talks about what is going on, what might happen. But then he doesn't really write any formal specifications or user stories before he starts hacking on this. But then, of course, the issues provided here by others provide some bit of a backlog as well. Then take a look at contributions. There's this guy called Corky Dude who has opened this pull request 3 hours ago. Says that text was specified twice in the parameter of click documentation removes it, so we can take a look. So his contribution to this project was looking at, in the list here, there says text ID or text of a link. So he has removed text ID or test, and it says text or ID of link. Contributing to open source software doesn't really have to be anything large. Even all these minor changes, if you have 1,000 people, different people contributing these kinds of small things, they add up. And that's how it helps in compression proprietary software. We have the army of these people around the world. If you open source a project, you have people giving these small things back. It adds up. Instead of if you develop it as proprietary software on your own with your own software engineers, then yeah.
That's true, but if there are multiple people helping with software, the quality of those job is that the people do the work, it's very varied. And so actually you need a lot more about doing inspections and other kind of quality work to actually get to keep the quality up.
Yeah, but when you hire a new person to your company, who do you think has a better basic level of knowledge, your new hire than a random open source contributor? So you would require in a company still, within a company, you also have same kind of quality control processes that you find in an open source project. In this GitHub case here, this contribution doesn't directly get incorporated. The Jonas has to take a look at it and accept it, which is the same as a code review practice in a company. Well, assuming they do code reviews, there would be another person looking at it. And then, given enough eyeballs, all books are shallow. Of course, this particular patch doesn't get so many eyeballs, but now, if I showed it to you guys and if someone had seen a bug in this case, then we could have typed there just that this thing has a bug. But we look back at J. Nicholas. This would be a new feature, adding a notification API. Then the author has provided quite a lot of feedback there. Then the original author has started to discuss, well, first of all, thanking about the feedback, awesome feedback. Goes back and forth. Let's see if here it says somewhere that has been updated in the meanwhile. No. This would be the quality control of this project in the sense that if someone provides crappy, then this guy just doesn't accept it. And well, many times in working on open source projects can require a bit of a thick skin. If you contribute something you think is the best thing in sliced bread, and then someone comes back to you and tells you to go away, this code sucks, shouldn't let you down. But then the good thing is that you can always fork, which is mean make your own copy of the project and maintain it. If you think you can do it better in practice, forks are hard to pull off, because the contributor mass is what the project like this needs to survive. So if I forked the thing and the main author didn't agree with that, then that would still continue to live, and I would somehow have to convince all the other people that my project is so much better than the others. Yeah, but did that change your opinion, your comment or not? No.
No, not really. It requires the building a good community. It requires work and the variety of the people that are participating. It's huge in the, for the large project. It's a huge people and you need to put a line somewhere that you actually can keep the quality up and try to get people to do better job in the future. And I think one of the one very important thing for a lot of projects is actually that you try to inspire people to participate and give them good feedback so they can improve their work.
But isn't one of the gains from this that you crowdsource the problem solving? You like he said, in a more traditional closed source environment, you still have to check everything. You still have to test it, make sure it's okay, it's good quality. Here you also probably have to do some amount of testing, check that it's good quality. But someone else somewhere has solved the problem and they post a solution. And then all that you have to do centrally is check, is the solution okay? Whereas in a non-open, in a closed source environment, you would have to solve the problem and then additionally check whether it's okay. So here, basically, someone else maybe solves the problem, and then you have the you centrally have the reduced workload of just checking, is this okay? So in the example we had earlier, where someone had just taken a comment and clarified it, taken something away. In a traditional context, the guy who put this project up would have had to trawl through the code, he would have had to find that thing and then fix it and then check if it's okay. Like, does this make more sense? Now, someone else did this and all he has to do is check, does that make more sense? And is it okay?
Yeah, I agree with that, but in practice what I have seen is basically that many cases this kind of is very simple fix, but for little larger problems, basically the problem comes that actually you need to have people actually to then review or inspect. And if you don't have enough qualified people, if you have very complicated software, it actually comes a problem that you don't have enough quality people to do the quality work for that.
Well, it's always a hard and resource issue. But so, like in here, it's more about allocation of the resources. But then the point here would be that if this would be a company's product, of course, then that problem solving part, you can still do all your own company's activities here on GitHub in the open. But then in addition, you get these more contributions. Of course, we comparing the proprietary and the open source projects, there's of course differences in the sense that both models seem to be thriving well because one hasn't killed the other. Then doesn't necessarily mean both still have their use cases. Not everything needs to be open source software. For example, Richard Stallman, the basic idea is that the software ordinary people need to use needs to be free software. So it doesn't take any of your free liberties. But if you think about a company developing, like, well, Tekla there across the street that develops 3D modeling software for the construction industry. It's steel buildings, concrete buildings. It takes a lot of capital and special knowledge to get that up. Then doing that in a proprietary way is, I think, very much acceptable. And I don't have any personal problems are in the sense that if someone wants to do an open source competitor and crowdsource it that way, all the engineers building designing buildings, then go for it, of course. But usually having capita for is the only way to get enough resources for minor projects like that. You can see that in any software project, probably having more resources is helpful. Of course, there's the law that adding more people doesn't make your project finish any earlier. Is it Conway's law, I think? Yeah. So if you're a project manager thinking about finishing earlier than adding more people. That's probably helpful because mostly it goes to training the new people, so that slows you down. So as far as quality assurance, you can see here that there's a service. Running online that is building the software. And the contribution there, you can make it a little larger. Passed 3 days ago. And it built with different kind of base software. This is a Ruby programming language project. It used versions 1.9.3, 2.0 implementation and testing it, which in my opinion in any software engineering project building continuous integration is a good idea. Whenever someone checks something in, you check that specific software change that it builds and passes all your testers and do automated quality assurance in that way. Because of the resources, pretty much the automated test suits and some minor testing around can be the only thing that happens in an open source project before their release. So one thing I always look at when deciding to use open source project is that see the test suite, that how big it is. If it has some kind of a test suite and good code coverage, then I can be reasonably sure that when they release something new, they don't massively break it, at least the basic functionality is there. But if there's no test suite and the code looks like spaghetti, then it's probably not something that I want to use in my own projects. But of course, this being a test framework, then naturally the test framework has a good test framework itself. And this is a nice side in the sense that we see that the updates regularly and there's new builds running. Setting something like this internally in a company, of course, is what I would recommend in proprietary world as well. Mm-hmm. Going back. Then, if we're using Ubuntu, Gentoo, or whatever distribution, want to contribute in terms of requirements engineering, and we can just go to their websites and then start filing bugs in any software. You can find these trackers for Firefox, LibreOffice, and so forth. If you have an awesome idea that you would like to get implemented, you can just provide ideas, or just what I usually do is just provide very small things and bug reports. Whenever something doesn't work, I just file it. Doesn't mean I necessarily provide the fix, but sometimes you get pleasantly surprised and you get a feedback after one day and it's fixed and working and you can take it into use, but many often, of course, you see that nothing happens for years. I filed a bug to Eclipse in, I'd say, 2004 or something, but every couple of years there's an email maybe providing an update when someone updates the issue or something, but nothing has happened since far. So many times, if you're a company working on open source software and you want a new feature, then the only way to get it is to write it yourself. But with a proprietary company, you could of course pay and ask them to do. I think we can see here also that if we search for Firefox, you can see from the bug numbers that there's 465,130 And the counter started from one. There's quite a lot of activity over the years going there. And in here, there's someone requesting that I have only a 48x48 pixel icon, and then he wants a bigger icon to be installed. It's likely something that he will also get. But in any software engineering activity that's been discussed in previous lectures, there's a way to get involved in open source projects. Requirements engineering, implementing themselves, and testing, of course, like in any case, are the primary ones. That let's see what Linux Torvald has said. Oh. He can be very vocal in communicating with people. But first, scientific purposes to wrap things up. On the science part, with the practical part, but you can also run open source, do science. For example, mining software repositories, there's a dedicated conference for mining software repositories. Because everything is in the open, the problem with the software engineering research is getting data from the industry. If you wanted to analyze sentiment in all emails, you would have to get all internal emails of a company. And then, you'd go and ask Nokia, would you give us all your internal emails from your email servers? It's not very likely to happen. Of course, they have research, Nokia research, so that they could research it internally. But in your university researchers, for example, then with open source software, you can still, with open source project, you can do that. And here is a paper that they have analyzed. The core team role, like I said, is layered. So they were looking at different Debian communities in this paper. Or what I've been doing myself is social network analysis, analyzing the communications between people based on the Agile Fan project we did. And then in here, a paper who they looked at mailing list communication and how it related to bug introducing changes. So there's communication in the mailing list, and then there's bugs, and they found correlations between them. But then I also see more social sciences oriented research every once in a while. Again, through mailing list, there's people asking to participate in surveys and so forth. Someone did a paper a while back on a very active individual who was doing bug triaging in the bug tracker, so assigning it to different people and then disappearing. It just disappeared from the project, and what effects that had. And then quite a faceless activity for the most part, but you can still meet people by going to conferences like FOSDEM to provide a face to names every year in Brussels in February, the first weekend usually, being going there yearly, partly for the beer, but for the conference as well. Okay, we have, by my calculations, about 5 minutes and change for questions and more discussion. If anyone has anything they want to ask me or... If not, we can... Yeah.
If you wish to join some open source project and you're completely unfamiliar with the whole code base, what would you suggest is the best course of action to get familiar with some program or project that you're totally unfamiliar with?
I have Capybara source code here. Checked it locally. Well, like any project you would run, in this case I can run. Probably I have set it up, let's see what happens. Here will be the answer, just getting it in practice and start hacking on it and testing it and using it. If you're using it to write a, if you use a library which is in the, or this framework, then the first step is usually it is something you already use, so you know how it works. Then I can try running tests. Couldn't get the tests. But then I could try running it, hacking it. There is no silver bullet. You join a company and start working on it. One company I joined, started working as a summer employee there. They basically had a policy that during the first month you're not expected to produce anything besides to attend trainings and introductions. It's with open source software, that's the same thing. You just have to start reading and working on it. Then participating. If it's a nice community, you do change it, you get feedback from them, and then you learn it. It takes time, unfortunately. No way to go around it. Hopefully they have built the software in the sense that using only a couple commands you can get it running, which is quite nice with these Ruby projects. But there are also open source projects that I've just given up because I couldn't get the test through running and getting it set up because it required me installing five different... It was a database cleaner abstraction that cleans all kind of different databases. It wanted me to have CouchDBs and Postgres, MySQL, and so forth, all set up and running locally. And it's just, that wasn't for me.